This week on Hyperspace Broadcast, the villains have a whole new formula, and you know, it actually works. Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcast, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it's worth revisiting or best left in the past. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about Sailor Moon episodes 11 through 20. And, you know, I would say not since Reboot has there been such a quick turnaround on how good this show is.
Aw, dang, it happened again. Where, yeah, once again, a show turns around from being what I would call almost despair-inducing garbage into something that's enjoyable to watch and that I'm looking forward to seeing more of.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that we literally started watching these episodes immediately after recording last week's episode. And we started with such a, like, resignation.
Yeah.
To say, oh, man, we gotta watch this. Do you wanna? And then
you could, like, hear the dread.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, not to keep referring to last episode, but last episode where I finished by saying, quite literally, this is the grave you dug, now lie in it, mixing metaphors
yeah,
to be even more dire. And we watched the first episode and we're both like cracking up at the show legitimately, like at the show's yeah, jokes, not at how bad it was. It was a crazy like whiplash of tonal turnaround.
And because, I mean, part of the reasons is they change the formula of the show. A new villain comes in, but the new villain also changes how the episodes work. Instead of having a fad every week that kids fall for and it becomes a stupid monster, it's this guy curses
it's
basically
an object that becomes a stupid monster.
It curses an individual, like a specific person. So you get these, like, interesting NPCs. What the fuck is my problem? Holy shit. These interesting NPCs. They're basically NPCs.
Yeah, with conversation extras, trees that
support
go, yeah,
characters. You get these interesting new side characters, sort of. Like, they're just like kids with different hobbies. But you watch them get ridiculously corrupted by this new artifact that is given to them or cursed by the new villain, Nephlite. Like a tennis racket curse that makes what can only be described as a demonic tennis player with powers to hit
with
balls
a tennis
that
racket,
destroy the
like,
court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is essentially we have like a good portion of the episode where, you know, this new side character NPC
shut
is,
up,
you know, introduced. And then they get corrupted, and basically it makes them super obsessive about whatever they were, like, their only character trait was before, basically. I mean, let's not dress it up. The tennis player becomes
tennis,
even more obsessed with tennis, etc.
Dressmaking.
Yeah, and, you know, eventually the scouts catch on, and they confront the person, and by this time you know, the demon's released and they fight the demon. It's a different formula, and I think the reason it works as opposed to Jedi is that it like just having new characters every episode, even if they are like the least defined characters possible outside of she makes dolls.
Yeah.
It's still more interesting than having Molly and Serena continuously getting hooked into this thing that's obviously sinister.
Yeah, God. Especially when that's also more bait for Luna to be, like, annoying and nagging.
Oh, God, yeah, that's true.
Oh, I can't believe you're falling for this. Oh, it's clearly a thing. Oh, you gotta pay attention. Except she, like, never realizes it's a Negaverse scheme. She's always just upset because Serena's not studying.
Yeah, but even that's more, like, you know, that's still kind of annoying on Luna's part, but you're right that there are fewer opportunities for Luna to be, you know, the audience clearly pointing out, why are you stupid enough to get suckered in by this?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, essentially the overarching plot of this block is we have Nephlyte, who's this new villain who starts doing this stuff. We're also introduced to kind of a rival Negaverse lead character, one of the generals, I guess you want to call her, named Zoicite, who is trying to undermine...
Nega Commanders.
Yeah, sure. Who is trying to undermine Nephlyte, not for any clear reason, as far as I could tell, but again, that's something I've wanted. Like,
yeah, right.
It is way more interesting seeing her, like, show up at Nephlyte's lair and make fun of him for failing over and over than it is for Jedi to keep going to Beryl and Beryl continuously being like, grr, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
Also, kind of interesting point, I think last week I pointed out that there was a character who is male in the Japanese version and female in this dub, at least. That's Zoicite, because
that's right, yeah.
She is attached to another Nega commander named Malachite.
Kunzite. Is it Kunzite or Malachite?
It's not Kunzite. I looked it up
on
Sailor Wiki.
Then.
It's not Kunzite, as the wiki says, in this dub. It's Malachite.
Okay.
I could have just gotten that wrong in the first place, but it's Malachite.
Yeah, whichever. We haven't really met him yet, so... But, yeah, and you see that. And it's weird, though, how fitting it is to have a female voice for that character. Because it's like... I guess it's from the era of anime, you could say, where there's a lot of pretty boys, for lack of a better term. There's a lot of, like, very effeminate-looking male characters with long hair, like, long, very effeminate hair and eyelashes and stuff. And this is definitely the case with Zoicite. Like, I was surprised to hear that that was the character that was gender-swapped.
I was unsure. But that aside, we have this introduction of a MacGuffin, which is called three different things. I guess the human name for it is the Imperial Crystal, which there's a princess that has it, and there's a whole exhibition that takes up the plot of an episode. But the Negaverse wants it for some reason, and they refer to it either as the Silver Imperium Crystal or the Silver Moon Crystal or the Imperial Crystal. So.
Yeah. The important thing you need to know is that it's the important crystal.
Yeah, right. It's the thing also, that, like, they want for some reason.
Yeah, that's never explained yet. Like, in the 10 episodes, like, we don't know why this crystal's important, what it does.
Yeah, except that Beryl refers to it as a family heirloom. So, I mean...
That's weird.
You know, like most MacGuffins, what it does isn't really as important as the fact that everyone's trying to get their hands on it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the final, I guess, thing that happens in this block, which I'll have a thing to say later, is that we have this kind of arc that's sort of a redemption arc for Nephlyte, but it also involves Molly, Serena's friend, like, falling in love with him and being obsessed with him. And
being manipulated by him.
Yeah, right. And this all ends with Nephlyte dying horribly in front of Molly. And that's basically how this block ends, with his corpse. So,
with a very brutal death.
Yeah. So that's what's going on overall in this block. But let's get into some more individual episode takes.
Yeah.
So to start with, and kind of tailing off of the Molly Nephlyte arc, I think... possibly my favorite episode, mostly by virtue of how crazy it gets halfway through, is episode 19, Molly's Folly, which is basically Nephlyte manipulating Molly into revealing that Sailor Moon is Serena, and also stealing the, I guess, Imperial Crystal, I'll call it, because that's the easiest to remember, from her mother.
Or what he thinks might be the Imperial Crystal. I don't think it actually is.
Well, okay, so here's where it becomes annoying and stupid. Technically, yeah. They steal the Imperial Crystal. Whether it is the Silver Imperium Crystal is questionable.
Okay.
Yeah. So, for all we know, it is the Silver Imperium Crystal. We'll just call it that. And the thing about this episode that's interesting, really, is that it involves Zoisite and Malachite sending one of their, like, demon henchmen to spy on Nephlite to steal the crystal from him if he ever gets it. It has this crazy scene in a park where Molly gives the crystal to Nephlite. Sailor Moon and the other scouts show up. And then Zoisite's demon shows up. And, like, Molly yeah. steps in front of Nephlite to save him from Sailor Moon's fucking turbo frisbee. It's, like, this scene is so crazy and so much is going on that it's hard not to like it, even if it's kind of weird. And really, it's just that I like seeing villains plotting against each other. That's one of the reasons Starscream is my favorite Transformer. That's one of the reasons season one of G.I. Joe is great, because all, like, Cobra Commander and Baroness and Destro are all trying to get the upper hand on each other.
Destro, you fool!
Yeah, right. But, yeah, like, that's starting to happen in this show, and that's what I've wanted from the beginning, so it's really awesome to see that.
Yeah, and it's just cool, it just, like, that whole three-way battle that kind of starts, or, like, this whole standoff that happens there is pretty neat and just tense in a way that you would never expect to get from Sailor Moon, especially combat in Sailor Moon, which is not the best.
Yeah, sure. It's like Gundam Wing, but even less interesting in that it's stock footage of, like, stuff being blown up.
I mean, it's Ronin Warriors or Power Rangers. They show up and they do one special move, and typically that's enough.
Yeah,
maybe the one special move won't work, and they'll do another one that's a combo of special moves.
Yeah, so you have a fire frisbee instead of just a frisbee.
Yeah. Instead of energy frisbee, you get energy fire bubble frisbee.
Good lord.
Really blows up the villain.
And you know what? I somehow forgot to mention this. You know what you'd expect to happen by the halfway point of a series that involves five main characters?
Yeah.
All of them to be introduced, which hasn't happened yet. Still no Venus. Still no Jupiter. They're still gone.
It's just the three characters for this whole block. You know, Mars, Mercury, and Moon.
Yeah.
That's it.
And Tuxedo Mask, of course.
And Tuxedo Mask. I mean,
Yeah. But what was your favorite episode of this block?
Oh, man. So I think one of the strongest elements of this whole block is the comedic elements and kind of the writing.
Yeah,
which is weird to say.
I nod in agreement with that, generally.
Yeah. I podcast nod.
yeah, great podcast, and I nod.
It's a role-playing podcast about talking about Toonami.
Yeah, sure. Go on.
So, the comedic elements of this are a bit stronger. It's weird to say that the writing is great in something that generally sounds pretty crazy. Like, the deke dub of this sounds pretty nuts anytime you hear, like, clips out of context and stuff like that. But at times, the writing actually works, and the jokes they tell work. And episode 12, An Unnatural Phenomena, which is incorrect grammar, but that's what it's called.
It should be
an unnatural phenomenon.
Yeah, maybe it's multiple. I guess, like, multiple animals turning evil is different phenomena.
Yeah, but it's an unnatural phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
That's where it really
what the hell
up.
All right.
But so a friend of Amy's, this like gardener that they meet in this park, is really upset because these land developers are going to destroy the park and replace it with an office building, and they're just like, oh, how horrible, this sucks. Nephlite comes in and possesses his hat. I think he like sneaks up on him and like touches his hat, and he's like, I'm going to make you so fucking pissed. You're going to use that anger to get to full energy potential. and spread that anger everywhere.
Yeah, and he looks like a Ronin warrior, basically, in that he has a symbol on his forehead. Like,
yeah. Nothing else about him looks like a Ronin warrior, to be fair.
Well, he's a guy, he's a gardener wearing a safari
disgruntled
hat.
Middle-aged man with a safari hat for some reason. And his rage starts spreading to the animals of the forest, including butterflies and squirrels that get possessed with anger.
The animals of the park. The forest implies that there might be something cool.
Yeah.
There are just squirrels and butterflies.
And so on the spectrum of crazy fucking things in Toonami that turn evil, completely non-threatening things that turn evil and are supposed to be threatening, we get perhaps the craziest butterflies.
Yeah.
And these butterflies, completely average butterflies, not giant, not ripped, crazy butterflies that
ripped
slash and attack
butterflies.
Things. You know,
what is
shredded
that?
What? Abs on these butterflies. No, we just get completely average tiny butterflies flying in front of like these construction vehicles and causing the glass to shatter, and everyone starts screaming and stuff. It's, and you pointed out, it looks like Birdemic.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Birdemic, they're just hovering around people as they scream. Like,
yeah,
it's not.
Be fair, it looks better than Birdemic, but
well,
still,
so does like, my ass. Like everything,
so, yeah,
looks
so does
better
everything.
Than Birdemic.
But yeah, just having like an image of birds flying overlaid over like shit exploding.
God, yeah.
It's just crazy.
Butterflies flap, yeah. Like fluttering around a light that then explodes. It's yeah, you. I would
and
be
and then you get squirrels
shocked.
With demon eyes. Like it's just insane. There's also. Like, the squirrels attack Luna, and it's like, kind of disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, like, all over. It's like, holy fuck.
Yeah, and she's, like, fucking writhing around. The squirrels attack just a random dude, which is much more hilarious, because he's just covered in squirrels, like, running away. But
not only is this episode funny because of, like, the, you know, it's random and ridiculous, you know, the kind of stuff that we want from Sailor Moon villains and just ridiculous anime shit. Like, why is this happening? It's also, like, genuinely funny because there's a subplot with Ray who's totally crushing on Darien, the guy who's constantly a dick to Serena,
yeah, and who's
who's totally not Tuxedo
yeah,
Mask,
of course.
Yeah,
don't get him confused, he looks nothing like Tuxedo Mask.
Ray basically like plots a way so that she can romantically accidentally run into him. And she tries to do it and trips, and he steps on her head, which is pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, right.
And there's, like, all sorts of moments where they end up going on a date, and, like, Serena gets jealous, and she shadows them on their date to the park by taking Melvin on a fake date. Which, any main plot or subplot that involves Melvin is a win in my book.
Yeah, for sure. And this whole thing is great because... To be honest...
Let's get a prune milkshake.
Yeah, of course, because Melvin's weird as hell. But there's a... You know, the scene where Ray, like, plans to run into Darien is almost exactly like, I think, my favorite moment in Tenshi Muyo, when I think Ayaka does the same exact thing. And it's just ludicrous, because they already know each other, like...
Oh, yeah, that's because they're... That's true, and because they're reading like romantic manga and they're just taking all the tropes and trying to do
right.
them.
Like that's why it's funny. It reminds me of that, and it isn't, you know, there's not a line drawn from, you know, manga to what Ray does, but it does seem like the kind of I think the reason I like that episode, because I like that one a lot too, is because the whole subplot feels like actual things that would happen to like teenagers. Like it feels like this whole stupid date thing and they're so weird and awkward with each other feels
overthinking
pretty
it
natural and... and trying to plan out like how you're gonna run into the guy you like. It feels funny in that it feels pretty realistic, especially for these characters.
And just the build up to that one, to that moment where like they do such a long build up to her trying to run into him and completely fucking up. It's like perfect timing. Like, they even do, like, the trick where it's, like, she imagines it going perfectly, but then, like, zooms out and you realize that was her imagination.
Yeah.
And then you see her try it, and she just completely
trips. He steps
up
on her head, and then she, like, awkwardly gets up and is like, oh, God, I'm sorry, that was my fault. And Derry's like, yeah, it was, and walks away.
It's fantastic.
Total asshole. But, yeah, and also, of course, this episode features a scene where a dude runs away from a bunch of butterflies fluttering around him, there's really no way you can go wrong with that one.
It's a big win, yeah.
So what about your least favorite episode?
You know, it's kind of hard to pick a least favorite episode in this batch, which is always a good problem to have. Like, you know, there's a decent amount of good episodes, but there is one that kind of failed to deliver on some of the potential it had. It's good parts in it. It's an episode called Dangerous Dollies. I hate that name.
Yeah. Yeah, so do I.
But it's kind of an especially creepy episode because there's this, it's just about this, like, depressed little girl who makes very creepy looking dolls, and she's cursed to, like, become really obsessed with making dolls. And she's just, like, locks herself in her room, and her mom's concerned, and she's just, like, making these fucked up looking dolls. And the extra fucked up thing about the dolls that you pointed out is that they have more detailed faces than anyone in the show.
Yeah, which I realized, like, later was probably by virtue of you don't really have to animate them, the characters, but it is still pretty strange.
But they're just like, they look like a detailed sketch of a real life kind of like baby doll. An ornate real life baby doll. Versus like the obviously cartoonish looking characters of the show. It's just a really weird disparity there.
Yeah, and also honestly, like, I think from this episode and last week's favorite episode, we can agree that dolls are inherently pretty creepy.
I guess so. I've never really had a big creep out thing about dolls.
Neither have I, but
they do it pretty well.
It is weird that these are the two episodes that I was like, why are these fucking dolls staring at me? I guess.
There's like dolls in the backgrounds that start like making fuck up faces and stuff.
Yeah. Well, and what it comes down to is, like, you know, beforehand, it's this girl who I guess won a doll making contest or something, which I don't know why I say that so skeptically, but that can't be true. That's impossible.
Won a doll making contest.
Doll making contest can't exist. I mean, Super Smash Brothers tournaments make sense, but that's bullshit. But, you know, she's, like, friends with Serena's little brother, whose name escapes me, and she seems like a pretty normal kid, but then, of course, the doll gets possessed, and that's when she turns into, like, the most archetype creepy girl in a horror movie making dolls in her dark room, like, yelling at her mom through the door.
Yeah. But, and this episode, like, had a cool-looking main monster that shows up that basically looks like one of those art class posture dolls, those, like, wooden segmented dolls that are very non-detailed, but you just do it to, like, you just pose them to practice sketching
proportions,
and postures and
basically.
Stuff. Yeah. It looks a lot like one of those, but, like, doesn't have joints, like, the joints are invisible. Like Rayman, I guess. But it doesn't deliver, like, the fight they have, which I don't expect a lot from the fights, but the fight in this one is literally the repeated stock footage of this thing shooting its limbs out about four or five times in a row, and it does nothing and then explodes and dies.
And not even cool stock footage of that. Like, it's shot from the front, so there's not really that much action to it. They're just kind of, like, increasing in size.
It's like, whoa, it's shooting its limbs at us.
Yeah, like, if they even had one shot of it, I don't know, from, like, a three-quarter angle firing its limbs, that might be cool. But there's something about the framing that's just boring to look at. And then, on top of that, the villain doesn't really talk, which they don't need to. But instead, they have this laugh that honestly sounds like a loop. Like, it doesn't sound like someone laughing. It sounds like someone laughed three times and then repeated it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's a pretty terrible episode.
It's an interesting one.
And, well, you know, yeah, terrible is kind of over the top with it. It's not, I would say, nearly as bad as most of the first 10 episodes. Like,
oh, yeah. No.
The characters aren't super annoying or anything. It's just kind of, you know, it spends a lot of time with Serena's brother, whose name is Sammy, by the way. And this girl, there's like this whole subplot with them, which among other things reveals that Sammy thinks Sailor Moon's super cool, which is a pretty classic, I guess, thing.
Yeah, of course, too, and you can't recognize her.
Well, yeah, of course, but I feel like I can't think of another example off the top of my head, but I feel like that's a pretty common, like, secret identity. I mean, to an extent, that's Lois Lane and Clark Kent. It's like, Lois loves Superman, not Clark, despite the fact that they're the same person.
I thought it was the other way around. I thought you liked Clark.
No, it's definitely Superman. I guess it kind of depends on the adaptation.
Isn't that more dangerous to be in love with Superman? Like, he might as well reveal who he is to her.
Oh, you always love the superhero, though. Like, that's how it always works. I feel like Spider-Man was the same way, at least in the Sam Raimi movie. Like, I'm pretty...
Yeah, there's the scene where he, like, does the upside-down kiss.
Yeah,
that's about
right.
All anyone remembers.
No, I'm almost positive that in the Sam Raimi movie, Mary Jane is into Spider-Man, but not Peter Parker. And I think she, like, talks to him about Spider-Man at one point. Whatever. This is irrelevant.
This is relevant.
Yeah. So in other words, Sammy's in love with the superhero version of his big sister. Not really. Yeah. He just thinks she's super cool.
Yeah.
And his, like, you know, young female friend makes him a model of Sailor Moon that's, you know, 100% photo accurate.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that episode's probably my least favorite, too.
Yeah.
These were, in general, pretty solid episodes. And, you know, I said earlier, any of them stand head and shoulders above the first 10.
Yeah.
So what about some individual moments? Honestly, we have, like, quite a list, so let's try to keep to maybe, like, two each.
Oh, man.
Which may be difficult.
Yeah, I'd have to say one of my favorite moments definitely comes from episode 16, Who is That Masked Man? Which, for the most part, is kind of a Serena, Tuxedo Mask, and Nephilite episode. But Ray, or Sailor Mars, is sick with the flu. But it's really funny because later on they come in for backup and she's, like, still sick, even though she's, like, transformed and ready to fight. She's got, like, the flu mask on and is, like, coughing in the middle of her lines.
Yeah, she has a surgical mask on.
Yeah. I just love the idea of, like, any superhero showing up to a superhero team, like, completely
sick. Yeah, kind of sick. Like, not, you know, debilitatingly sick, but, you know, with, like, a
just
sniffle.
Like, should not be up. It's great.
Yeah, that's pretty good. There's a pretty great moment where, and this feels like a cut joke to me, but there's a point where Luna is lecturing Serena about, you know, something.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a close up of Luna's face, and then it cuts to a wide shot revealing that Serena has just walked away during the lecture. And there's, like, a lot of little moments like that. One of the things that's kind of interesting about all this is that these episodes mostly focus on Serena above the other two scouts. Sometimes to their total exclusion. But it's still pretty entertaining because I think they've got Serena down now.
Yeah. She's,
My God. There's an episode... And, of course, this is the first one we watched. I think the point where I was like, this is going to be a good 10 episodes for certain was when the tennis villain turns, like, Serena into a big tennis ball or, like, traps her inside a giant tennis ball. Yeah. So just her head and arms and legs are sticking out.
She starts, like, rolling around slowly, helplessly.
Like, well, no, like, starts getting bounced around and then, like, Tuxedo Mask shows up and saves the day, basically. And frees Sailor Moon from the tennis ball, but there is a little bit of time where she's kind of standing on the sidelines cheering for Tuxedo Mask, but she's still trapped in the tennis ball.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
It's
like,
really,
God.
Totally absurd.
So what else do you got?
Oh, yeah, and there's in episode 18, Worth a Princess's Ransom, there's there's a character in that that's pretty ridiculous. It's like about what they, there's like some royalty in town or something, and they're concerned about the crystal she has.
Yeah,
and
the imperial crystals introduced.
The princess, whose name is Princess Diamond.
Of course.
She's literally just female Melvin. Like, she has the same, like, crazy, giant, swirly glasses that Melvin has. Like, to the point where when I saw the preview for the episode, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a good one. Melvin hangs out in a dress. And it's like,
yeah, right.
No, wait,
sure.
It's not Melvin.
No, I mean, what's kind of hilarious about it, too, is that there is, of course, a point later in the episode where her glasses get knocked off and she, you know,
she
has the same
normal
face as everyone else. And then she puts the glasses back on and she's Melvin again, essentially.
Yeah. I was really hoping in that episode that she would encounter Melvin, though.
Yeah, that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah,
come
that's
on.
True. That's true. That would have been fantastic.
Oh, man, there's a moment
where...
It would
be great if they look at each other and then he's just like, I'm just not into her.
God. There's a moment in the middle of Ray and Darian's date where they're on a boat in the middle of a lake in the park.
Yeah.
And she mentions that she likes to pick roses from the rose garden, and Darian claims to like roses himself, which makes Ray, for like 1 second, maybe connect the dots that he's Tuxedo Mask.
Right.
Which is mostly hilarious because I like to picture Tuxedo Mask either buying roses or stealing them from the park.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. It's like, I need roses to throw. Just buying them at a liquor store.
Yeah, just fucking... I mean, I really, though, you know, we could go on for probably another 15 minutes of individual moments in these episodes that are really funny. The point is, especially in the beginning, these episodes are pretty good. And
yeah,
we're going to go to the break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about that in more detail and then talk about the bet.
Watching Sailor Moon on Cartoon Network.
Hey there, listeners. This is the break. Obviously your favorite segment, but even if it's not, please keep listening because I actually have some exciting news for you. But before I get to that, let me just go ahead through the usual spiel. Please subscribe or send us a review on Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry, that's blubrry.com. or iTunes. iTunes reviews are especially helpful for getting the word out. You can also find us on facebook.com/hbpod and Twitter @hbpod. We tend to post clips, screenshots, episode art, kind of cool stuff throughout the week, in addition to obviously our current episodes, and we're currently running through our backlog of episodes and adding art to those. Now, the exciting thing for you, dear listener, is that we are going to be taking listener-submitted bets for future episodes. We're trying to figure out some ways for listener engagement that we haven't really been trying so far, and we think this is a way that will mesh pretty seamlessly with what we've been doing so far. So the next series after Sailor Moon that we're watching, I believe, is Tenchi Universe, getting back into the Tenchi stuff joyously, I guess. So if you have anything that might be kind of an interesting, you know, catalog of tropes for that show, common occurrences, that sort of thing, hopefully something kind of funny, please send it along to us. We'll obviously call you out when we take the bet, assuming that we do. And you can reach us via our aforementioned Facebook or Twitter. Again, that's facebook.com/hbpod or Twitter @hbpod. Either directly messaging us on either of those or, you know, posting will get the message across. Or you can send us an email directly at hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com. Our next episode will be up on September 6th. Boy, that was a long break. And we will be getting back to our discussion of Sailor Moon in just a moment.
Sailor Moon, now continues on Cartoon Network.
We're back, and let's get into what we thought about these episodes. So I'm gonna let you go ahead and start that. What do you think about these episodes, Peter?
Oh, I mean, I think it's a huge improvement. In a lot of ways, we've got multiple different things coming in and changing the script in the show. Of course, Netflix comes in and changes the formula. Now, it's still a formula. You're still going to get, you know, episodes that are formulaic in the sense that now it's about an individual getting a cursed item that drives them insane until a monster comes out, and then Sailor Moon defeats the monster. But it's a better formula. Like, it's definitely a formula that's more entertaining, especially, like, seeing these random characters go nuts with crazy voice acting or seeing these stupid monsters that are getting a little better. I think the monster
they're a little more like specific to individual traits, which is nice. I mean, we wouldn't have had a tennis playing monster if Jedi was in charge.
Exactly,
unless I and guess Netflix... he like started a fad around tennis maybe.
Yeah. and Nephilite in general design wise is a much cooler villain than Jedi, to the point where, you know, Nephilite shows up, he's got a fucking, like, he's got an awesome red sports car, he's got cool hair, he's got his own lair that's like a cool cathedral that's really dark, and he's got like star magic and shit that he does, all this shit that Jedi doesn't have at all. And it was to the point where, like, on the second episode, I was like, man, Nethra is so cool that I've forgotten the name of the last villain. Like, I forgot who Jedi was, literally. Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because you're saying this stuff, and I just realized, you know what the big thing is about... I mean, maybe it's not the big thing, but I feel like Nephilite has a theme to him, and Jedi just didn't. Like, I mean, it's not played up that much, but Nephilite has this whole astrology theme going on.
Yep.
What did Nephilite have? Nothing. He didn't Jedi's even have his own was... place to be. Like, he's Jedi's just hanging was... out with Beryl. It's
Jedi's theme was jets.
Yeah,
that
right.
He could send at you.
Was infiltrating places and no one recognizing him, as opposed to Nephilite, who...
Realistically, Jedi's theme was mediocrity.
And, you know, he's... Burn. Sure, and he's so explicitly evil, like, over and over again, and they don't recognize him, whereas Nephilite's consistent alias Maxfield Stanton, tennis coach, is not explicitly evil for the most part. He's kind of just, you know, giving people gifts like, oh, hold on to this tennis racket. I'm gonna fucking curse
it. I guess his alias isn't explicitly evil. I was gonna say, he's pretty evil.
Oh no, Netflix evil fucking obviously. No, but his alias is hidden evil much better than Jed ever was.
Yeah. And another big development of the show, I would say that Serena as a character develops during this block of episodes. Like, not only she develops a little bit more maturity in life and a little bit more responsibility as a Sailor Scout and competence for sure, to the point where it's like no longer are you getting in battles where she's the only one there and she's just crying the whole time and running away, which happened last block, which is really annoying.
Yeah, and even more importantly, you don't have, like, I'm not sure if she necessarily got more responsible with life or whatever, but man, I don't remember there being a scene in this block where she's, like, not doing her homework and Luna's like, you have to do your homework. Yeah. Sailor Scouts need to study. Like, that.
Her flaws are less annoying in this now.
Sure. They don't highlight the ones that are annoying, and also they don't have. For the most part, they don't really use Luna to underline them as much, I feel like. Luna is still a scold, but less of one.
Yeah, I think, and she's more competent in combat. Like, she's in a lot of scenarios where she has to, like, actually save the day and not rely on, well, I mean, not necessarily rely on the other scouts or on Tuxedo Mask, and things rely on her decision making, and she's even recognizes after the fact, like, oh shit, like, I did that on my own.
Yeah, there is an episode in this block where Tuxedo Mask doesn't show up. She just saves the day on her own. No, Tuxedo Mask doesn't come in to fucking shout encouragement from the sidelines and then drive away. Like,
yeah, right.
It's that, to me, is the biggest thing about this plot, and I just realized that. Like, holy shit, there's an episode without fucking Tuxedo Mask.
Yeah.
Where she has to save Ray and Amy. and they're not just dumping on her for not doing her homework and, I don't know, being a crybaby or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you for the most part. I think that my favorite point of this is that we get a bit more of, like, things that I wanted out of the first 10 episodes, both in these sort of internal struggles of the villains trying to gain favor, and yeah. also with the Sailor Scouts sort of hanging out outside of, you know, uniform, I guess. Hanging out as Ray, Amy, and Serena, I yeah. suppose. And though, like, I find those interactions pretty funny. That's a big part of why I liked this block out of the gate a lot. Like, again, you know, I don't mean to keep driving the stake into the ground, but the episode with Ray and Darian and Serena and Melvin following them is yeah, hilarious.
That's fantastic. Lots
that's
of good,
great.
Lots of good goofs in that.
And, you know, there's, like, there's just some choices in the writing and even the mm-hmm. voice acting of Serena that I think work really well. Like,
yeah, yeah.
There's one line that she has, and I can't remember. I think, like, Melvin, it's after the, Jesus. Melvin introduces the whole idea of Princess Diamond and the Imperial Crystal. And then the Sailor Scouts are, like, gathered up trying to figure out how to get into this, like, gala that they're holding for it. And there's a point where Serena says, like, yeah, Melvin told me about the security in detail because...
I forgot about that.
There's, like, just some tossed off lines by Serena specifically about Melvin that are really yeah. funny.
I just, yeah, when she emphasizes in detail, it's like, yeah, because he's yeah, such a right. nerd and he
Marvin,
never stops talking.
Or Melvin, rather. yeah, like, that works really well. There's a pretty great episode where Serena is getting advice from Andrew, the guy at the video game arcade, as opposed to, you know, the other kind of arcade, which I guess is the X-Men villain.
Sure.
Yeah, the Andrew who runs this arcade, and then Darian, and they're both giving her advice on how to deal with this problem with Molly. And that also just, like, plays really well. There's something about it that's kind of funny and charming in a way, yeah. like Tenchi Muyo sometimes was. Like,
yeah, I can see that.
There's something the about those scene. Interactions that I really like.
Yeah.
Hey, so Michael, just jumping in here. I put a content warning in the description and in the chapter select, but in case you didn't see either of those, we are going to be talking about some abuse narratives as they relate to Nephlite and Molly. So if you find that potentially distressing, please skip ahead to 49 minutes 34 seconds or the chapter labeled Bet.
That said, there is one thing about this block that I really dislike, and I don't want to talk about it a ton because I feel like it's touchy subject matter and I'm not super informed, so I don't want to offend anyone by
okay.
being stupid, which makes it sound much worse than it is. But basically, near the end of this block, you have this whole thing with Nephlite and Molly, and it's creepy. It's kind of more or less portrayed as, like, sort of a manipulative, abusive relationship between the two of them. Like, he's literally getting her to betray her best friend because he knows her feelings for him. Like,
yeah, it's manipulative. He manipulates her. It's pretty obvious. I didn't really have a problem with it. Like,
well, okay,
I think in some aspects you're,
let me finish.
I mean, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the problem I have isn't even necessarily like that. I mean, it's kind of gross and I'm not sure if I trust Sailor Moon to totally handle this sort of stuff well, but the problem I have is that that is wrapped up in his redemption arc. And, like, that gets under my skin because it's really easy to read it as Molly's love changed him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fucked up message.
I guess. I mean, that's pretty much, yeah, that's pretty much how they set it out. Like,
I mean, right down to the sailor says PSA afterwards, like almost explicitly stating, Molly saw something in him that no one else did, even himself. Like,
uh-huh.
That's shitty. I don't know.
Is it?
The love changes a manipulative abuser narrative? Yeah. That's fucked up.
No, I get that that's like the fantasy of someone who's in an abusive relationship, for example.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a thing that basically blames the victim of the abuse for not being able to change the person, which isn't possible. Like,
sure,
that's
yes,
the problem.
According to the trope.
Yeah, of course.
Like, you know, I think in the show it's handled in such a way where it's like, yes, she's being emotionally manipulated. That's clear and obviously not okay. And she's still, like, confused and shit. She, you know, in her confused, like, defends him. And through that defense, he kind of, like, experiences love for the first time. But it's, you know, I don't really find that, it makes a little bit more sense to me when it's like couched in the idea of this is an alien existence, you know, from literally another dimension who does not experience or has not experienced love like that. It's a little different than, like, say, a manipulative abuser who's like, you know, I don't know, like, he's still manipulating, he's still kind of abusing in that sense, but I wouldn't say that, I'd say it makes at least a little more sense that the whole love changing thing. And then he dies brutally.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, that's,
you know,
but the thing is, that's ultimately kind of the issue I have with it. Like, I'm all for, like, villain redemption arcs. I love that stuff. I mean, that's like Dragon Ball Z wall to wall is villain redemption arcs to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, really more Dragon Ball. But, like, I don't want to fucking feel bad or be made to feel bad when this dude dies. Like, he fucking teleports into a 14-year-old's bedroom at night. That's fucking creepy as shit. I don't care if it's an alien. It's a fucking alien who looks totally like a human. And like an, like, you know, adult man who's driving around the car. Like,
I feel like you might be reading into it too much in terms of, like, the subject matter. Like, you're not supposed to come at it with, like,
I'm not the first person
dark, jaded
that's
mind.
Seen this, though. Like, I'm sorry.
Sure.
It's not like I'm going out on a total limb here.
That's fine. Like, I don't find that it necessarily tracks myself. Mm. Like, I don't know. The whole plot seemed to make sense to me. I felt a little bad for him at the end. I knew he was still shitty and was going to die. I wouldn't trust him if he was still alive. It's like, I don't know.
Whatever.
Okay.
I mean, I've said my thing. Like, I don't really expect to have, like, a debate about this. I just, personally, I find the undertones to be there, and I found them to be creepy, and to be totally honest, it soured my experience with the last several episodes of the show. Like, this started out super strong for me. That stuff kind of squicked me out.
Uh-huh.
So, overall, I could have done without it, personally.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. I don't really see it in the same light. But, you know, at this point, it's just, like, agree to disagree.
Well, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Like.
But, all right, so, that, in any case, you know.
Yeah, on that super dark note, let's get to the bet, which involved Melvin talking about computers, which Melvin barely appeared in these episodes, so he didn't really talk about computers at all.
No, he only appeared to talk about computers once when he was discussing the fiance of their teacher, who's like super in love and super about to enter this wedding
she's
dress
about
making
to get
contest.
Married.
Yeah, like, and she's super about to get married.
Yeah,
and he just goes, "I heard he's a computer salesman."
Yeah, that was literally like, the only mention of computers by Melvin.
Yes,
which
he did it.
Wasn't super shocking. So that means I won.
I know. For some moronic reason, I was like, "He's going to talk about computers, the internet, 10 times. It's got to happen." 12 times.
13,
no,
I think.
No fucking
was your final
way.
Guess. Like, yeah, no. That wasn't going to happen.
Like that, it really sucks when like slowly it dawns on you. And I know you have great experience with this.
Yeah. I don't think you get to complain about losing bets ever. So
or
shut
it
up.
It slowly
maybe.
Dawns on you that you're definitely not going to win the bet while you're watching the block of episodes, unless you have like one episode where Race Bannon kills 1,000 people.
Yeah,
or
you
Melvin
know, it
talks,
also kind of
Melvin
sucks
goes
when
a tirade about the internet.
Yeah, it also kind of sucks when you're watching an episode and then in the space of that episode alone, you lose the bet, even though it's an impossibly high body count.
Thanks, Race Bannon.
Like, yeah. So, cry me a river, Peter.
Yeah, well.
But anyway, that means that I am making the bet this episode and having the first choice of the number. And I think to continue on the theme of why haven't the other two Sailor Scouts been introduced yet, because that still baffles me. We are halfway through this series, and I thought these were major characters. So where the fuck are they? But yeah, you know, I'm going to say, how many episodes is it going to be until we see a new Sailor Scout? I'm going to say 3. And that would be closest without going over.
I'm going to say 1. As in, 0 will be next episode, and then 1 would be the episode after that. Is that correct?
I mean, in this case, I don't think 0 really counts. I'd say if it's introduced next episode, then you'd be good.
Okay, well, I mean, it's not like there's much breathing room. Sure, 1.
All right, cool. So let's see how long it takes to get some new characters into this show that are not one-off demons.
Yeah.
Unless you have anything else to say about Sailor Moon episodes 11 through 20, I think we should close it out.
No, we're pretty good. enjoyed it. I'm excited for the next couple episodes, for sure.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the Nephilite death fallout in terms of what happens to the Negaverse people.
Yeah.
Also, from what I understand,
how Molly deals with it.
From what I understand, there's an episode where Molly tries to take revenge on Zoicide about it, which is interesting.
That's kind of awesome.
So we'll see. Until then, this has been Hyperspace Broadcasts. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week. Some acknowledgments. Bumpers were again taken from the video Toonami, Sailor Moon, and DBZ Bumpers 1080p, uploaded by YouTube user PooperScooper99. Still the best promo I've found so far. The opening and closing music is Vapor Dive In by Onatech, off the album Onatech Instrumentals Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and you totally should. For obvious reasons, it's awesome. Rights were secured through Jamendo. We'll be right back.